Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're talking about heat on the Brian Lehrer Show. And remember those cold winter days when we daydreamed about being warmed by the summer sun? Well, now that it's July, we don't have to pine for warm weather. But not everyone is so lucky. You know the movie Frozen, where the main characters meet a snowman who, like many of us, craves a little bit of heat?
Summer?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know why, but I've always loved the idea of summer and sun and all things hot.
Really? I'm guessing you don't have much experience with heat.
Nope.
Nope. We might all be having a little more experience with heat if climate change continues to develop as scientists expect. A lot more experience, in fact. Our lifestyles could be about to change immensely in the coming years to deal with climate change in our daily lives and perhaps more to resemble some of the things that we heard from our callers from elsewhere in the world. More air conditioners, cooler architecture, even moving out of your house because it's underwater, or restructuring our work and our school days. David Biello is editor for Environment and Energy at Scientific American. He's writing a book about living in a new geologic era due to climate change, so he has spent a lot of time thinking about these things. David, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. My kids would be psyched that you got frozen in there.
Right. And you wrote an article in Scientific American about how ants could help global warming cry uncle. Let me just start there.
Well, I wasn't expecting that question, but yes. The latest science shows that ants speed up the natural weathering of rock. Rock is actually how CO2 gets out of the atmosphere naturally. And ants speed that process up by, it seems, breaking up the rock. Have a little love for ants.
And do I see correctly that your Twitter bio is simply the H.G. Wells quote that history is a race between education and catastrophe?
Right, exactly. And we're definitely in that race right now, and we will be for the rest of this century.
He must have been referring to things before global warming, right?
I think so. Although, if you look at what he thought about Mars, he definitely thought the analog of global warming was responsible for what was going on there.
Huh. And you're working on a book about the Anthropocene.
Yes, there's some
Want to make that our vocabulary word for the day?
Sure, why not? There's a lot of debate about how to pronounce that. But essentially,
correct me.
It's Anthropocene, or if you're British, Anthropocene. So those are the three contenders. But essentially, it's this idea that we have entered a new geologic era because human impacts have grown so large that, whether it's climate change or moving kind of rocks, we move more sediment than rivers these days. So our impact on the planet will be visible in the rock record for thousands, millions of years. And it's only a question of how long that impact will last.
Anthropology is the study of human cultures.
Yes,
so
exactly.
The Anthropocene would be the age of human impact.
Correct. And it would be the first geologic era named after a species. We're pretty anthropocentric, so that makes a lot of sense.
So as we might say, the Pleistocene era or the Stone Age, today we live in the Anthropocene age.
That is the argument, exactly.
Or do we already, or might we enter it?
The argument is that we have already entered it. It's just a question of when. Some people argue that it happened actually a very long time ago when we started farming, so about 10,000 years ago. Some people argue that it's a lot more recent, say, with the dawn of the nuclear era. But I would say the consensus is that it probably started right around the time we invented industrialization and started doing climate change.
So listeners, obviously people in our area have already started to adapt in your personal lives, in some cases because of Sandy. How else are you starting to adapt for the climate future? 212-433-WNYC. How do you see it in your life? 212-433-9692 for our guest David Biello from Scientific American as we imagine our heat culture of the future in the climate change Anthropocene era. Let's go through a few different parts of just the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think will happen to Miami?
So the big prediction for Miami is a lot more water, right? Sea level rise. We're already up about a foot since the 19th century. Yeah, about 10 inches. And it's particularly bad along the East Coast, actually. We're one of the global centers of sea level rise because of...
You mean the whole eastern seaboard of the United States?
Correct, correct. We actually are experiencing some of the largest sea level rise in the entire world.
How does New York City compare to Miami in that respect?
We're pretty similar. We're very similar.
A foot. That's
yeah.
a lot.
Fortunately for us, we have slightly better geology. So Miami is sitting on some former limestone, and it's about 4 feet above current sea level. We're a little bit higher, unless you're in Battery Park City.
So what do the computer models tell us it'll be like 50 years from now?
So Miami's going to be even hotter. It will be even more tropical city. We're looking at potentially as much as 2 feet more by 2060 of sea level rise. 2 feet more would get you about halfway to where Miami sits presently. So they're going to need to do something pretty drastic if they want to keep that water out and keep Miami viable. The biggest impact isn't going to be like flooded homes and things of that nature, because that will come with hurricanes. It's going to be the loss of fresh water. As the seawater comes in underground, it's going to get rid of kind of the fresh water supply. And so where does Miami get its water then?
And New York City in 50 years?
New York City is going to be a lot hotter. We've already seen some of that. I think we might follow the Japanese and start walking around in shirt sleeves rather than the business suits we seem to fetishize currently.
What do they do in Japan?
So in Japan, because essentially they had the Fukushima disaster and had to cut back on electricity use, the thought was, why are we walking around in these business suits in the middle of summer when it's extremely hot? Let's walk around in short sleeves. We'll be cooler. We won't have to run the AC so much. And they did that, and they were able to save a ton of electricity and essentially survive the loss of nuclear power in that country.
So not just casual Fridays, but casual June, July, and August.
Exactly. Casual summers, which sounds great.
So let's go to another part of the country, the Dakotas.
Yes. So the Dakotas are changing actually quite rapidly. If you think about it, over the course of one farmer's lifetime, we've gone from kind of horse-drawn agriculture to this satellite-guided precision agriculture where essentially they're almost leaving it up to the robots to farm. And they've switched from wheat to corn and soy. And that's part of the kind of general shift to hotter, drier conditions in the Great Plains, the breadbasket of the United States. Places like Kansas aren't going to be the agricultural hotbeds that they are now. The Dakotas are going to be more of that kind of locus.
So will it be better in North Dakota when it gets warmer?
You know, it might be better in North Dakota when it gets warmer, and it's going to be better for farmers. The only problem is they'll probably lose their jobs to those drones that I mentioned.
Is there an argument to be made that it's a zero-sum game? In other words, whatever some cities lose, or not just cities but areas, by becoming too hot, other places like the Dakotas and Canada will gain, and it's, you know, it's a net wash for humanity as a whole?
There are definitely winners and losers. I don't know that it's a net wash for humanity. Climate change, most of us live in kind of the more temperate regions. We're not living in Siberia or northern Canada. Those places, yes, are going to get a little bit warmer, a little more amenable to human life. But the problem is that places like Miami are going to become a lot less amenable to human life as we know it.
We'll just have to move this whole operation and set up New Siberia Public Radio.
That's right.
Dan in the Hudson Valley, you're on WNYC. Hello, Dan.
Hi. The thing that my wife and I did is we bought a house that is 500 feet over sea level so our kids have somewhere to live. I'll take my answer off the air.
That's a very good idea. I don't think we're going to see 500 feet, so you should be pretty well high and dry.
Joe Ginder in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Ron. How are you?
Okay.
I grew up in India, in North India, near Delhi, and I'm a farmer, and now I'm a cab driver in New York City. And I was talking to the girl, you know, you just have the guy over there who telling about we're creating more systemically, you know, like look in Manhattan, how many glasses building and all that. it creates more warm weather in the city, you know. And we also have a food, which is the food is not a, we have a food, this is not a, actually made for our body. All this prestige, you know, all this things we're eating also create in our body, which is not made for the human. And all that kind of things also create our fabrication. Or the clothes are not made for this human life, because we are made by five elements. We are going away from that. All
in the hot climate that you came from in India, did people cover their bodies? We heard from some of our caller who had lived in Brazil, for example, and in Africa, the people cover their bodies. They don't just go in shorts and tank tops to deal with the heat.
They cover the body when they're really hot, and they stay in the shadow under the tree or somewhere, you know, like. And
Joginder, thank you very much.
Shade is really important, and kind of loose-fitting long clothing is a great way to adapt to the heat. But he's right that our clothes and our kind of buildings are not built with a hotter climate in mind.
How about New York-style skyscrapers? He mentioned the glass buildings. You would think glass lets in a lot of heat, as opposed to, I don't know, a brick building that just has smaller windows.
That's exactly right. This is why we have greenhouses. Lets the infrared in, doesn't let it back out again. And that's why we have to run those air conditioners so full blast that people are walking around in sweaters inside, even when it's, 100 degrees outside.
Paul in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Yes, hi. I'm wondering if the climate change can be blamed for the rise in number of sinkholes in the state of Florida.
Aha, sinkholes. I was in Tampa for a few days last year, and that was the big story there. A few sinkholes had opened up out of nowhere, it seemed, and swallowed people up, seriously.
Yeah.
And people were all paranoid about the sinkholes.
Florida is known for sinkholes. That's a feature of limestone geology. I'm not sure that there's a link directly to climate change, but it certainly has to do with water meeting limestone, kind of eating away at it from underneath, and then the sinkhole forms. So potentially, as those sea levels rise and maybe water levels, the water table underneath the land kind of comes up, then you might have more sinkholes.
So in this 50-year outlook, will people stop moving to Florida for the warm weather and just move to Maryland or Delaware?
I think so. I mean, certainly those places will have similar heat and maybe a little bit less of the climate chaos that Florida can expect from hurricanes and the like.
And as we go out, this conversation has been about the 50-year heat forecast and how people would have to adapt if we keep going down this road, not about a policy debate. But is there anything that you particularly favor to stave off the worst?
Well, I mean, we're starting to finally make some moves to restrain our greenhouse gas emissions. The Obama administration has those new carbon limits. We're going to need to go a lot further, and we might even need things like the ants to save us. So we should really kind of encourage all those potential solutions, anything to get kind of the CO2 back down again.
David Biello writes about energy and the environment for Scientific American and has a book coming about the Anthropocene age in which we are now living. Thank you.
Thank you.
School is out and it's sort of a buzz. But back then I didn't really know what it was. But now I see what habit is, the way that people respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best.
Riding We're talking about heat on the Brian Lehrer Show. More to come.
Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out.